So there is a purpose to this and why I'm telling you all about why being happy doesn't actually matter. It does. It's okay. But we're going to continue in Ecclesiastes. And if you remember last week, we have this writer and he is on the search for meaning, which is why our series is titled, Does Anything Mean Anything? Pets. So outside of the list, we had pets came in online. I'm going to liken that to favorite people, I suppose. But similar, but pets, okay, make them the most happy. So our writer is on the search for meaning. And last week, we kind of took this broad look at where he's trying to find meaning, but it's all about meaning of things that are here on Earth, things we experience under the sun. And today, he looks for meaning in how he describes it as pleasure, and he's getting at happiness. Now, I want to make sure we think about happiness in kind of the same way today as we talk about this. So I want to distinguish actually between happiness and joy, because I think they are actually different things, and in the Bible, they're a little bit different. Julie always says it really well. She's like, happiness is an emotion or something you feel. Joy is something you choose to have. We have joy. We choose to have joy even when things are difficult. Now, joy is talked a lot about in the Bible. It is all over the Bible. Happiness, on its own, not so much. It's actually not a super biblical concept, and I think part of that is I don't think it's a primary concern of God that we are happy. Now, that being said, I think he's totally cool with us being happy. He's not opposed to it. He's not upset that we're happy. It's just not his primary concern. So what our writer today is going to do in Ecclesiastes 2 is look for meaning in different ways to make himself happy. We're going to look at those also in terms of our relationship with Jesus. If you remember, we have Jesus has come. He saved us. How can we view happiness in light of Jesus? So what I want us to think about today is this, is that we should chase Jesus before we chase happiness. Chase Jesus first, then chase happiness. Because if we chase our happiness first, the strength of our connection goes that way. And if we can all think about it honestly, sometimes happiness will fade. And what we want is to still have a strong connection to Jesus. So we chase Jesus first, then we can go after that happiness. So a writer is going to look for happiness in three places. Let's look at those and see how they play into our lives. So we're going to start Ecclesiastes 2, verses 1 through 3. It'll be up here behind me. Also, your Bible's on the table if you want to use those. I believe the bookmarks are marked for the passage. So let's get started. Ecclesiastes 2, verses 1 through 3. I said to myself, this is our writer saying, come now, I will test you with pleasure to find out what is good. But that also proved to be meaningless. Laughter, I said, is madness. What does pleasure accomplish? I tried cheering myself with wine and embracing folly, my mind still guiding me with wisdom. I wanted to see what was good for people to do under the heavens during the few days of their lives. All right, so what he's going to do is he's testing himself with pleasure to make himself happy. Again, all to find meaning. Now, he spoils it right away by saying, yeah, it didn't work. It was meaningless. Just being happy provided me no meaning. But let's look at what he tried to do. First part, he says he cheers himself with wine and folly. Basically, let's look at this as maybe he's drinking and going out and having a good time. He's living a little bit of maybe a party lifestyle. He's casting off inhibitions, or he's cutting loose and just kind of letting himself go. There's a couple of views on this whole he's cheering himself with wine. Some will say he's trying to like change his perspective, a little bit of like using a substance to change his perspective. Others will say he's trying to become a connoisseur of wine and like cheer himself with the passion of it. We're not really sure. I think it's more of the first one, because he wants to cheer himself and embrace folly. This is kind of that whole going out and cutting loose. But he is still focused on finding meaning. So I don't think this would be the equivalent to what we would say, like, he's going to go out and get completely blacked out drunk. He's not doing that. He's having a little bit. He's partying, all keeping his wits about him, because he's on the search for meaning. That's what he's doing. He's kind of figuring out, like, is this good for people to do? Why do people do it? Does it mean anything? He's like, I got to find out. So let's cut loose. What he's doing, in a sense, is creating his own version of what I would say is kind of like the movie and the story behind Footloose. Who is familiar with the movie Footloose and the story behind, okay? It's actually based loosely on a true story of Elmore City, Oklahoma, 1979. The high school seniors wanted a prom and dancing but public dancing had been outlawed since the late 1800s, is how the story goes. They wanted to control alcohol and rowdiness, and this all came to a head with the students versus the city council, and then from there we got the movie, as we can see here. Kevin Bacon in the movie. I know there was a remake, not about the remake, the original, better with Kevin Bacon, all right? And it included the song by Kenny Loggins, right? Tonight I Gotta Cut Loose, Kick Off My Sunday Shoes, right? That whole song. Stacy and I, there's pictures of us from our wedding. We are dancing in those two pictures, 2 Footloose. This is how we actually opened the dance floor at our wedding. We did the, like, we did our first dance, which was to a song I wrote and recorded. She did the father-daughter dance. And then we were like, let's start the party. Let's kick it off. So we came out. We danced the first half of Footloose, and we went and grabbed everybody. So we cut it loose. Start the party. Cutting loose can be fun. We're smiling in there. It's fun. On its own, cutting loose is fine for the most part, depending on what you're doing. Maybe you forget everything for a little bit, and you want to go out and have a fun night or a weekend or whatever, and that's all well and good. Parties, dinners, maybe it's video games for you to just unleash, anything like that. On its own, God's not opposed to that, okay? But we have to be cautious not to chase that fun, to chase that high we get from it, to chase the thrill. Because when we chase that, we don't chase after God, our connection to God weakens. And eventually, that thing that's been fun or thrilling comes down, and it's not as fun anymore. It's not as thrilling, and we can feel empty. But if we're chasing God first, we still have that connection to Him. So let's try, can we bring God in to that cutting loose, bring God in to that fun? Now, I'm not saying you're always bringing God in like this super evangelistic way. I'm not saying I'm going to go out and throw darts and throw theology at the same time, right? That's not what I'm getting at. But like, how can it be as if God was with you? You know, just a simple, God, be with me tonight when I go out. Or Jesus, come hang out with us. You know, in a sense, how can Jesus be your wingman? That type of thing. You have Him with you. Stay connected and strengthen your connection with Jesus while you're having fun, so that if and when that fun fades or the happiness dwindles, you're still standing connected to Jesus, which is a connection that we don't lose. All right, so that's the first one that our writer went at. He went at kind of cutting loose. And again, he found it meaningless, so he tries something else. Let's look at Ecclesiastes 2, 4 through 7 to see what try number 2 was. I undertook great projects. I built houses for myself and planted vineyards. I made gardens and parks, planted all kinds of fruit trees in them. I made reservoirs to water groves of flourishing trees, about male and female slaves, and had other slaves who were born in my house. I also owned more herds and flocks than anyone in Jerusalem before me. All right, so he tries to find happiness in stuff, in possessions. And he gets himself a lot of it, and he gets himself the best of it. When he talks about building these houses and vineyards, he is creating his own version of paradise, is what he's trying to do. And he's got the means to do it. It talks about all kinds of fruit trees. Some are saying this is like a reference back to the Garden of Eden. When God created everything, he's like, I'm going to create my own version of the beginning, just to give himself the best thing he can. And the point is for himself. He's not creating this for other people. He's not trying to be a philanthropist. This is for himself to have, to make himself happy, to see if he can find meaning, right? The word for park that is in here is meant like an enclosed or walled-in privacy space. Again, for him, his possessions. All right, so he's got this stuff, and then he goes and possesses people. He owned slaves. This was slavery in this day would have been more common. We've talked about it a little bit before. It's not the same as the slavery sometimes we think about, but he did own slaves. When they had children, it was customary that if two slaves had children while they were owned, the owner would assume ownership of the child. So that's what he's saying here. So he's got this own personal paradise. He owns people, and now he says he owns more flocks and herds than anybody. And this is owning more than what was needed. It'd be one thing if he owned a lot because he had a lot of people to feed. Not the case. He owned more for the sake of owning more. All right, he was like showing off his money. He tried to find happiness and meaning in his possessions. He created his ultimate living situation. As I was trying to figure out what's our comparison to this, I thought about, first, man caves. All right, guys, are we familiar with man caves? I thought, man caves, if you're not familiar, the place where guys want to go and just kind of hang out and be guys and have all this stuff. So I pulled a few of my dear friends here and asked them, hey, your ultimate man cave, everything's on the table. What do you want? I got, they want bars, ping pong tables, huge TVs, comfy seating. Ryan wants a beer fridge, pool table, 80-inch TV. Chris was specific on the size. Surround sound. For me, I'll take all that. I built a picture of mine, so I'll take all that. The nice bar, I want vintage arcade games. I think those are awesome. Yeah, Brad's with me on that. Primarily NBA Jam and Turtles in Time, which is right there. The golf, I want a golf simulator. If you ever played screen golf, yeah, I know Eugene's with me on that one. Like, right, all this, right, this great thing. None of this is inherently bad things, right? This is all okay. You can have this. So ladies, feel free to let the guys get a man cave, especially if they're going to invite me over. This is fine. But, right, because I'm going to bring Jesus with me. Very good. But we're not going to stop there, lest I get accused of going one direction. The other side. This is a newer concept, I think, but the she shed is a thing. So we have the she shed. So I pulled some of the ladies I know. They want fireplaces, comfy seating, TV, good lighting for pampering, a foot tub and massager, facial and nail stuff. I don't know about any of this. Lots of pillows, couches, weighted blankets. Side note, we just got a weighted blanket, and it's awesome. Soundproof from the kids. I like that idea. Soundproofing away from the kids, right? So Stacy crafted kind of the picture of hers with the nice fireplace. That's nice. Fireplace, the couch, the TV, same idea. Right, all this stuff, we're just creating it for ourselves to have. It's nice. Now, if we were like our writer, it would be to strictly make ourselves happy. It wouldn't be necessarily to invite our friends over too. It would just be our prized possession. And possessions can make us proud. They can make us feel like we have something of value. That can in turn make us happy. It's okay to have things that you're proud of or things that you really value. Many of us probably do. My guitar sits back here. I value my guitar a lot. I love my guitar. I would be upset if it was damaged or stolen. I got that right after Jeremiah was born. So it's okay to have that kind of stuff. But if we put too much pride or too much value in the possession, again, that's where our heart goes, and we lose some of that connection with Jesus. Pride in our possessions can dwindle our value of Jesus and keep us from remembering the value that we have in him. We want to have that value in Jesus because stuff breaks, stuff fades, stuff loses value. And if we keep trying to replace it and just get more, we'll have a hard time being happy with what we have. The happiness of possessions goes away, but the value we have in Jesus doesn't. So how can we, again, kind of connect this idea of possessions and value with God? I don't think necessarily God has to approve every possession you have. If it's a big purchase, I would say absolutely pray about it. But I would say it like this. Check if you can think about having like an internal balance sheet and look at where you are assigning value to different things in your life. Are you assigning the most value and taking the most pride in a relationship with God, or is it some of the other stuff, the stuff you own? Let that balance sheet be really heavy towards God and then everything else to come after that. So if the possessions fade or they stop making you happy or they lose value or whatever it is, we still understand what we have and what we possess in our relationship with God. All right, so that's our possessions, our stuff. So our author's tried, now to recap quick, he's tried to cut loose, do his own version of Footloose. He's tried to create his own ultimate paradise, like our man caves or she sheds. Both of them don't do it for him again. All right, so he tries one more thing. Let's look at Ecclesiastes 2, verses 8 and 9. It says, I amassed silver and gold for myself, and the treasure of kings and provinces. I acquired male and female singers, and a harem as well, the delights of a man's heart. I became greater by far than anyone in Jerusalem before me. In all this, my wisdom stayed with me. What I think he's doing here is trying to increase his status, right? He's trying to find happiness in his status. That's what we're going to look at. Now, so he has a bunch, he says, of silver and gold. In this case, I think he's taking his wealth to improve his status. Wealth on its own as a way to make him happy, we're going to have a week on that itself, on just on wealth. That's coming up. So I think in this one, he's doing it for his status. He says, he's like, I got the treasures of kings, right? This makes him a higher status symbol. Then he says he creates a choir. Basically what he's doing is creating a mixed gender choir just for him, right? He's got the finest soloists and the best voices you would get. They were there to regale him, to praise him, impress others around him. Try to think you have some people over or you're around and you got your own personal choir that just want to sing to you. To me, it sounds horribly awkward, right? I don't know that I want people singing to me, but this is what he did and it increases his status. I mean, if I'm walking around, I go down and I see Sam and Sam's got like a super awesome 16-piece choir singing about him. I'm like, that guy means something. Status way up. Sam, you want a choir around you? Totally. Yeah, exactly. Right? That's what he's doing. Then he says, he gets a harem, which is a bunch of women. He's trying to increase his status by the number of women he can sleep with. That's what's happening, a harem or a concubine. Also, the women in this harem would see him as high up, as somebody of status. So he's using people to try and propel his status. The singers, the women, all of this, in theory, is what he's going at, will make him great. And this super important person, he, in essence, he's trying to become the elite of all the elites, all right? And status symbols like this and people of status exist in our world. Who here familiar with the name either Anna Sorokin or Anna Delvey? Anybody know the story here? I know Stacy does. We watched the show on it. Okay, quick thing. She's been in the news. She's a con artist, and this is a real story. She's a Russian-born German woman who came to New York and fraudulently claimed to be this wealthy heiress, and she conned people out of money, out of hotel stays, out of all this kind of stuff. She would draft fake bank ledgers and fake balance sheets to try to increase her status. What she wanted to do was start what she called her own foundation to basically rub elbows with the elite of the elite in New York. And she wanted this fancy building. This whole thing, it made huge news. It eventually worked for a while, and then she got caught and arrested in 2017. It inspired the show Inventing Anna on Netflix. Stacey and I watched it kind of to see it. The whole point is she does all of this just to become a person of elite status. That was what she wanted. She wanted to be with the upper echelon of people. Her status mattered, and she was willing to fake and lie and cheat her way to get there. That's what it mattered to her. Now, our writer, he didn't have to fake it. He could actually buy all this stuff to try to make himself there because he tried to get himself happy with status. If we think about it, we all have some type of status, our standing, whether that's at work, socially with friends, in our families, in our communities. It might be high, low, middle, it might not matter much, but somewhere in there, we have some type of standing. And increasing our status may seem like a way to make us happy. Higher standing, it might come with more respect, or more authority, or more money if it's work, or other perks. And in general, there's nothing wrong with being a person of status, whether that's at work, you're the big wig at the company, you're the chair of something in the community, none of that is inherently wrong. But the issue comes because all this status is what I would say is outward, meaning it's created here by other people, right? And it takes away from what our real status is, which is we're children of God. That's our biggest status. It's not about status in a company or community, but that we are loved children of God. And I think what we need to do is remember that status first. Chase that status first before any of the other ones, because that one doesn't leave, right? And there's nothing wrong with wanting to become bigger and better at whatever you're doing. I don't think that's wrong. But focus first on being a child of God, because any of those statuses that we have can absolutely fade, just like everything else. Unfortunately, people lose jobs or move out of communities or stop being on committees, and those things go away. But being a child of God is better and longer lasting than any of those. So we chase after being a child of God first. And it's worth it. So keep the focus on the status of being a child of God and chase that, because it never goes away. So our writer has tried to cut loose, build his own paradise, become the top dog in society, all to try to make him happy and see if there's meaning in it. Well, let's read his report, our last two verses for the day. Ecclesiastes 2, 10 and 11 says this. I denied myself nothing, my eyes desired. I refused my heart no pleasure. My heart took delight in all my labor, and this was the reward for all my toil. Yet when I surveyed all that my hands had done and what I had toiled to achieve, everything was meaningless. A chasing after the wind. Nothing was gained under the sun. So he tried. He gave himself everything and didn't hold back. And he had the capacity to give himself everything. He took every pleasure possible, stuff we probably couldn't even dream of having or acquiring for ourselves. And he even says he took delight. His heart was happy. It actually did make him happy. So this should be great, right? He was happy. This is good. But he says no, because he wasn't just in search of happiness. That wasn't what this was about for him. He wanted to find this bigger meaning. If we go back to last week, he was still on the search for the filling in the donut. And he didn't find it in happiness. He was happy for a while, but then he knew it didn't actually have meaning. You know, it's like the morning after maybe a really great night, and then you're like, man, was that all worth it? It was fun while it lasted, but that's gone now. And it kind of drops off. The cutting loose, the possessions, the status were fun, but they don't last forever. It didn't all add up. He was looking for something. He was trying to make it work and didn't. It just didn't fully fit together. I was doing a puzzle with Joella this week. We're trying to get her to do some puzzles to work on that, putting things together. And it was this train, this number thing. And she's doing pretty well putting them all together. And we got, I think it was the number 7. And she's looking around, and she knows she needs another piece with balloons on it. She can't find the piece with balloons on it. And if you know my 3-year-old daughter, things like this are the end of the world. And it was. And she let me know about it. So I'm searching the house. I'm going through her bin, and we can't find the missing piece to the puzzle. It didn't all add up. That's what's happening, is he's searching everywhere. He tried all these different things. He had all these pieces that should have worked. But they didn't. Because something else was missing. We can have all these pieces, but Jesus has to be that piece, and it's the first piece that we have. There isn't anything wrong with being happy. I want you to hear me say that. As I come up here and say, none of this stuff makes you happy, yeah, that's just to get a rise out of you a little bit. It's okay to be happy. I would love for all of you to be happy. I really would. But unfortunately, we've all experienced times when happiness comes and goes in different areas of our lives. And happiness, apart from Jesus, is empty happiness. It's, again, that donut without the filling. We're going to keep coming back to that. It's the donut without the filling. So connect happiness to Jesus. Bring him into it. Make him a part of it. Go to him first and invite him along to that happiness. Chase Jesus before you chase that happiness. Strengthen the connection to Jesus before anything else so that when the happiness fades, we're still connected and have a strong connection to Jesus. That is the filling of that donut that we're after. So chase Jesus before chasing happiness. Let's pray. God, I thank you for today again. God, I thank you for another challenging passage in Ecclesiastes, God, but one that we can learn from. So God, I pray that we would all be people that would chase you first, that would get up in the morning or at any part in the day, we would come to you first before anything else to really just grow our connection with you, to strengthen our connection to you so that when anything else in life fades or gets difficult, that we're tied to you, God. We're connected to you in a strong way, God, and in a way that will last and always provide us with the peace and comfort that you bring and the love. So, God, I pray that if we cut loose or we need to just kind of unwind, that you would be with us in that. That any of the possessions we have, God, that we would value you more than any of them. And then, God, with status, that we would remember that we are your children first before anything else. So, God, I pray that you would help us all to just see you first in everything else. In your name. Amen.